Welcome to Spotlight on Heritage. This is John Costa and my colleague Rob Watson's with me. How are you, Rob? You okay?
I'm very well, thank you, John.
Cool. Here we are, picking up the Spotlight on Heritage baton again and moving forward. And today we've got two guests, got a new guest and a returning guest. So our new guest is Tom Krause-Weiss. How are you, Tom?
Hello, I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Great, thank you for joining us on a nice sunny day. And returning to join us, particularly for this one, because I thought it would be quite interesting to get her take on this subject, is Tina Barton. How are you, Tina?
Very well, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Good, good. Well, welcome. And I'm looking forward to this one particularly because, Tom, you've got this project that you've been working on, and you're working on issue two now of Chiswick magazine, which is How Much Is It? Is that right?
Have I got
that right?
Yeah, pretty much.
Perfectly right. So it's C-H-I-S-S, but they're both like dollar signs. Yep. IT, Chiswick magazine, and it covers streetwear, photojournalism, and real life, which kind of I thought quite fitted well with the Spotlight on Heritage, because then we can kind of pull out all of those things, because Rob and I, being the other side of 35, photojournalism, if I've read this article headline once, I've read it a thousand times, which is, you know, photojournalism's dead, or photography's dead, or, you know, these kind of things. Streetwear, I don't understand it. Missed me the first time round, and I know I'm sure we can pick up on that, but maybe you can give us some insight onto the Gen Z and what it actually means. And then real life, which I think, yeah, that's cool. What do you think of us? So it got quite good about heritage. So tell us a little bit about, where did you first come up with the idea for Chiswick?
So when I was about 16, I got a record player for Christmas, and
that immediately makes me feel old. Because they're not around anymore, are they, Rob? They're very heritage.
They're really expensive now. They're about 60 quid for two. But nevertheless, I just wanted one because, again, my mum and dad talking about, oh, back in the day, like, I grew up with CDs and then digital music, but always seen online about, like, audio files and what it means to have a piece of digital media. Oh, sorry, physical media. And I think when I got Michael Jackson Bad for my first album, and I just fell in love with it since then, because it was therapeutic to take it out, put it in. And I think that sort of love for physical things developed over time until I got to the point where I was like, I really like magazines, I like Vogue, I like newspapers, I like DVDs, CDs. So why don't I make my own magazine? Because the stuff I want to say.
Talking about that experience, yeah, and why you like it. And there must be other people of your generation that actually like to have things like that.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Yeah. Now, I think a lot of people, if you've, maybe you, I'm going to say something now that people will recall rather than that, but that moment of going in, selecting a record, particularly an album, for example, taking it home, taking it out of the plastic bag, almost like taking it out the sleeve, then reading the wording, you know, the lyrics that were actually on the cover that your vinyl was in, taking the vinyl out and putting it on for the first time, is one of those things that was actually quite defining when you're a young person. Rob, you must be able to remember that the first time, not maybe your first record, but certainly that whole process of taking albums out of and reading words and listening to songs for the first time, maybe you'd heard on the radio through owning the album. That's something that our generation was used to growing up with, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was kind of pilfering your parents' record collection. So I remember as a kid playing the Sound of Music soundtrack a lot, but we had a little dance set player. And it was just kind of, you'd look at the picture as much as you'd listen to the music. The two were, and the Beatles always said that, you know, the Beatles were really clear on the design model that they used, that they wanted the lyric sheets. They were the first, I think Sgt. Pepper is one of the first albums to have lyric sheets in, as well as booklets and things like that. So it was seen as being an integrated part of the pleasure of, you know, you're absorbed in this culture. Why do you think that, how do you describe it as Gen Z? Let's get some of the terms right. So Gen Z, and that's the age group between kind of millennium born.
So it's about, I think, 2000 to 2010, 11, yeah. 12.
So kind of late 90s, yeah, early 2000s. Yeah. And why do you think there's this kind of, because you said about digital experiences, why do you think then there's a kind of a an interest in having physical copies of things?
I think because there's been such a big resurgence of stuff like that, because especially with my generation, grow up with, I still remember SCART TVs, big box TVs, and then sort of flat screens with DVDs built in, and then Blu-ray, and then all of a sudden everything's just on your phone and on the TV. And I think, well, especially me, I've got bored with social media, and I think a lot of the time my generation romanticized sort of the physical, having physical things, and almost, again, using social media to show that off, like, look, I like collecting records, I like collecting books, I like collecting vintage fashion and that sort of thing. So, and I think because of the way, like, the industry is going, a lot more people are wanting to be more creative, especially when it comes to TikTok, because anyone can just get out their phone, record a video, edit it, post it, and get a million views. And there's a lot of money to be made in that, and I think that's one of the reasons why, if that makes sense.
So picking up on that, Tina, what was your take on albums and music and stuff like that? Because obviously, like, you know, Rob and I are roughly the same age, or about 10 years younger than us, and then Tom's a lot younger. So, you know, what was your generation?
It's really, really interesting, actually, because I grew up in terms of, my mum was rock and roll and jiving when she was little. But that whole take on the digital CDs and the change of how people access that kind of stuff, I think people do romanticise, young people do romanticise about the stories that their grandparents and their parents told them about how they listened to music, accessed fashion, you know, lived in the real world. And I feel the platforms today help people do that. But I do remember my mum buying having a gramophone. So that whole thing about taking her favourite songs out the sleeves and putting them on and seeing her and my auntie rock and roll or jive around, you know, that whole nostalgia effect, which was, it's kind of really different for me, because I did collect music when I was younger, and I remember having a stereo and getting Kylie and Jason's record for Christmas and putting it on and playing it and stuff. But I think my attachment, or my generation's kind of connection to music, is quite different than Gen Z. I think we were in the almost sweet spot, because I'm able to look back and know all the different types of music and methods of which my mum and her generation engaged with it, and what my relationship was with music, and how that, if I look at the music and the trends from when I were growing up, how that influenced what we wore, you know, where we hung about, where we were seen. So it is really fascinating. And just to finish that off, I had a huge CD collection, and I got rid of them all. Sold them all at a car boot that me and my sister did. And then not last Christmas, but the Christmas before, for my Christmas present, I had a CD player. And now it's a regular thing. Every time I go to a new seaside town, I will go into a charity shop and have a look through the CDs. And I've done really, really well at collecting my old CD collection back, which, yeah, it's probably cost me the fraction of the price it did back then, but it's really enjoyable. So, yeah.
So, Tom, do you collect CDs?
I'd say some of the, like, I'll go HMV and I'll have a look at some of the new albums, but when it comes to the older albums, so I don't know, whether it's like the specials or that sort of thing, my mum has...
She has it all
pretty much. Reggae, everything. So I think it's just nice. It's just a library just to be like, I can listen to that. So yeah, I suppose in that sense, I do collect CDs.
Now, what I was saying earlier about Chiswick magazine, obviously streetwear, photojournalism and real life, did you consciously not do something like music or movies because you just see that as part of real life? You're including that in all that sort of stuff. But streetwear is a specific thing, and photojournalism, I know, is something that you're interested in, isn't it?
Absolutely. I think I wanted to tailor it to stuff that I was passionate about and I wanted to write about. And when talking about real life, I think again, that goes for everything, and culture's a lot more than, again, it's a big part of heritage, but it's also, again, different generations, different upbringings, different sort of, just sort of different experiences in life. Again, music, TV, all of that different stuff. And yeah.
So for you, it's more of a way of observing your life, but then writing about it and engaging in people in conversation as to, this is what's of interest to me. You know, what do you think of this? Why would you do that? So it just sum up briefly in this section for us. What's the feedback been to issue one?
Really good. Majority of it's come from friends, family, and copies I've sent to people from LinkedIn or other creatives, including yourself. And people have just been commenting on how nice it looks and how well written it was. And I'm really happy with what I've got back from it.
So you're listening to Spotlight on Heritage with John Costa, Rob Watson, and our special guest this week is Thomas Krause Weiss, talking about Chiswick magazine, and we've been joined by Tina Barton as well, who's returning. So Tom, what does a typical page look like in Chiswick?
So it's a two-page spread, and it'll have the same theme across. With the second issue coming, I want to do different sort of themes and just styles. So I wanted to go sort of for the PS, like the sort of like the gaming cheat magazines covers that you'd find in a corner shop. Issue one was just sort of a bit of everything. So
putting your stall out.
Yeah. So when I interviewed you for issue one, it was a bit more of like a broadsheet sort of style. When I was talking about Lil Connor, who's a hip-hop artist, it was a bit more funky. So I think it just depends on what it's about. So if I was to do something about photojournalism, it'd probably just be a picture and just something that's focusing on the actual image that I'm talking about. If it's something a bit more serious, it's not going to be as colourful. If it's something fun, it's going to be colourful.
Are you like an avid reader of magazines? Do you collect a lot of magazines, like freebies and buy? Obviously, you mentioned Vogue earlier and stuff. So you're always absorbing what others are doing and just thinking, actually, I like that bit, I'm going to use that myself, or I don't like that, so I won't use it. So are you kind of influenced in that way, but you're also doing your own research all the time?
Yeah, absolutely. So for inspiration, I'll go on Pinterest, or there's websites online where you can look at the old archives of Vogue magazine front covers and such. And I think you can get inspiration from anywhere, whether that's TikTok or someone else is doing something not similar, but you think that'd be a good idea to sort of use that and blend it into sort of print. And again, I think that's really easy to do. You see a poster on the wall or a bit of advertising, you think, I like the typography on that, or I sort of like the style.
Do you subscribe to any magazines? No. Tina, do you just subscribe to any magazines?
Yes, I do subscribe to magazines, John. I have been an avid collector for many years now, more than 15 probably, of Wired magazine. So I like the balance in that magazine of new technology, kind of good stories that are happening around the world in terms of developments of certain areas, whether that be healthcare, medicine, you know, kind of environmental sustainability. I love all of that, and kind of keeping my pulse on up and coming trends. So I suppose, Tom, do you feel that Generation Z, why is streetwear and music and popular culture so kind of, why are Gen Z so interested in that? Like, from your point of view, to the point where you felt so compelled to create a magazine or a publication that actually captures that?
I think everything that has been always comes back around again. and you'd see people my generation now wearing flares. It was a bit looked down upon to wear sliders and socks, and everyone wears sliders and socks now. Again, leather jackets, double denim, that sort of thing. And again, mullets, tattoos on your arms, that like tashes, everything like that. I think, it's going back to that romanticization of it. There's been TikTok trends, and I can't probably count how many times it's been this sort of trend, but do I look like my dad? Or my dad used to break hearts back in the day, and it would be the son and the dad comparing themselves. And again, dad's got a mullet, dad's got a tash, and the son has the same. Oh, I found my dad's clothes in the attic. And again, pictures of my dad wearing those outfits. And not everyone's like that. Everyone's got their own style. And I think, again, it's that sort of clique thing in society where they're like sort of the stereotype of you got the nerds, you got the jocks. And I feel like everyone's sort of merged into one sort of melting pot in society, especially in my generation, where everyone's got TikTok, everyone's got Instagram, everyone's got Twitter, everyone's got a YouTube channel now, everyone wears the same clothes. And I suppose in a sense, there's not really individuality anymore, but at the same time there is, because not everyone likes the same thing.
So Rob, magazine, do you subscribe to anything?
I do. I subscribe to the Wire magazine, which is a music magazine, and I collect there. And I don't read it as often as I should, even though it still goes through the letterbox. But I've got, if you're interested, Tom, a collection of about 86, yeah, how many issues is it? About 40 or 50 copies of the Face magazine, which I've been trying to get rid of for a while. So we'll arrange to collect that. But I was going to kind of, an interesting thing about two things. One is, you say there's kind of a globalized sense of fashion, so it's easy to get a sense of what people, there's videos and, as you say, websites where people do what's fashionable in Tokyo, what's fashionable in San Francisco and streetwear and stuff like that. And then also this generational thing about trying to look like your parents. We didn't want to look like our parents. You know, it's like there was a break from that. Rather than trying to recreate what our parents wore, it was like trying to be something different, and there was a push against that. How do you make sense of that, and how are you using the magazine to make sense of these dynamic things?
So I'd say from my own personal experiences, my dad's given me so many clothes, and it's been, again, Stussy, Billabong, all of this vintage stuff that's fit me, and I've just fell in love with it. And I think, again, that's developed my love for old streetwear. And again, I think just growing up in a household where the Fugees are on, the Specials, Wu-Tang Clan, like all of that stuff. And I'm not saying like that's quite common, because again, my mum loved George Michael. My mum used to listen to Take That. And again, it's sort of like polar opposites. You don't really associate streetwear with George Michael. But I think, again, going back to that real life thing with Chizit, everything's interconnected in that sense. Whether, again, my mum used to listen to George Michael, but she used to wear Ed Hardy jeans back in the day. She used to have a buzz cut. And if that answers your question in the sense of how does that connect to my magazine, I think it's just...
Do you think that because you're thinking this, that by having a magazine, you're actually saying to other people, it's okay to be thinking about it, or not so much confused? I mean, Rob was just saying there about, you know, when we were younger, for example, our generation, we didn't want to be your parents. You know what I mean? Yeah, you listen to the Beatles, you might listen to, I don't know, just don't, you'd watch the old Grey Whistle Test, you might, you know, read the Melody Maker or something like that, but you had your own style, because we came through sort of punk and the 80s, and you had to go through all of that sort of the yuppies and stuff, that you kind of, well, I'm going to make my own way and do my own thing, whereas your generation has had that lived out on social media by turning around and saying, well, actually, you don't have your own style, because you have to be fitting in with what the whole global youth movement is, whereas actually Rob being from Liverpool, me and being from the East End were two completely and different areas.
There's another factor which I wanted to jump in on. The Gen Z live with their parents for longer. So you got a different kind of relationship with your parents. And we weren't friends. Well, I'm friends with my mum now, but we weren't expected to be friends. Now it's like kind of, the anathema for me is seeing families walking around John Lewis and they look identical. The children look like the parents and the parents look like the children. You can't tell the ages and there's no clear separation of generations. Is there a countercultural element to this, or is it just kind of like a merging of this generationally?
Where are we now at? Web 6?
Web 6.0?
Web 72.0, yeah.
So I think, again, going back to that sort of globalisation thing, I would say Gen Z is cradled a lot more by families. Right. Yeah. And supported, opposed to, again, people moving out at 18, going to London to go live, getting a job in a pub and just paving the life out for themselves. But I still wouldn't say it's easier because of the rise in tensions of the world and how amplified is that sort of like echo chamber effect it has when it comes to social media. And I think that's the biggest killer, if anything, because everything is so amplified on social media. Like, again, comparison's the thief of joy. Everyone's comparing, oh, she has better clothes than me. He has this tattoo. Why don't I look like that? And I think
there's a lot more pressure now, maybe, yeah, because of social media and stuff.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about the photojournalism element of it. Is this you reflecting on photojournalism that you see now or from the past, like Life magazine, for example, and thinking about that, giving your own reflection? Or is there an element of you going out and doing photojournalism yourself because you think, well, actually, I like my camera. I've got several cameras and I'm going to go out and do stuff.
So John can recall, most likely, I'm very, I overthink quite a bit. So I was doing photography at university and I decided to change course. And I was so focused on why and how I wouldn't be a photographer if I didn't do this degree. And we got to a point where I felt settled with the current course I'm on. And I think it just sort of made me realize, you don't need a degree to do anything, really. And again, it's just that sort of that thing of, if I like a photo, what can I do with that? And how can I sort of adapt that's going to help me? So if I was looking at Tish Murtha's photography, like mainly focus on the working class, well, I can talk about that on a blog post on my website and curate that into a collection, or curate 8 photos I like and what it means to me, or comparing them to my own photos, not trying to recreate them, but sort of getting the same sort of message across, because again, it's different. Every photo has a different meaning to everyone. There's no one true meaning or like relative truth to anything. And when it comes to Chiswick, a lot of the time it is, I am choosing to use my own photos, especially on my blog. But again, I think it would just be nice to curate other people's works that might not be as known, or like even like Kevin Sight's stuff. I think that's really interesting. But again, I didn't know who that was until you told me about him.
Yeah, it's an interesting character. The sort of the first person at the beginning of the internet, really, who went off and covered every conflict in the world for Yahoo and sort of filmed it all and blogged about it in real time and stuff, all before, almost like, you know, when we were still having the noise of the AOL.com dial-up type of stuff. So it's an interesting character. Now, you are going to be involved in our Doc Photo 8 exhibition later in July as one of the photographers, but actually you're going to cover the whole thing as Chiswick as well. So really, you and 7 or 8 other photographers as well. And I'm really looking forward to that, because it's your eye on what other people do, and I think that ultimately is what makes your photography so interesting, is the fact that you you're prepared to look at what other people are doing, not just, oh, I want to be authentic, but actually looking at what other people are doing. Well, what's my take on that? Not can I do it in that style, it's like, what is my style compared to that person?
You learn from others as well. I think there's a heavy emphasis on I can't copy that, but how else do you learn? Like, you learn norms and values, and like during the socialization period when you're growing up. But again, like, if you like something, why can't you sort of magpie in that sense, in air commas, and just adapt it to your own work?
So Tina, I mean, in things like Wired and stuff like that, would you say some of that is photojournalism, or is that more sort of in-depth writing of different subject matters and stuff like that? Because like you said, it's got medicine, it's got, like, you know, technology. It also used to have that sort of, you know, what's out, what's in and what's coming type thing as well. That was always an interesting section.
What's Wired, what's Tired, and what's
expired.
Coming down.
Yeah, expired, yeah.
Which was a nice little... I like that magazine because all the areas that I'm interested in, it serves something up to me. So I feel like that's why I've kind of subscribed to it for so long. And I like the way that the articles are laid out, and they're in-depth interviews with some of the, you know, leading scientists and, you know, movers and shakers in the world today, whether that be tech or whatever area. They're in a really kind of... they've got the finger on the pulse. And I feel that that's what you're kind of, not Wired-esque, but that's what you're trying to do with Chiswick, in that kind of, you know, allowing Gen Z to almost have this outlet through your magazine of kind of, because identity is a massive thing, I feel, when it comes to Gen Z. You've all, like, we spoke about everybody looking the same. You know, and not being able to distinguish really between kind of mums and children because of the way they dress. And when you listen to you talk about that, and I mean, you are a bit of an anomaly because not every person your age would borrow their dad's old T-shirts. But I feel that Gen Z, there is a big, it's fashionable. It's acceptable to want to do that. And not almost turn yourself into a mini parent, but actually, you know, immerse yourself because of that connection you have with your parents.
Tom, thank you for talking to us about Chiswick magazine. You said you've issued one. Mm-hmm. You printed a few out, yeah. Handed them around to a few people, a bit of feedback, okay. You're doing issue two?
Yes.
Yeah. What's your aspiration for issue 10? What does it look like compared to what you're working on for issue 2?
I think I don't really want to think about when it comes to like how big my audience is going to be sort of thing, but I want to have a nice audience that like the magazine, even if it's 5 people and 1 person that I really admire, like whose work I admire. I think that's more important than having 100 people buy the magazine and then not buy it again. And I'd rather get feedback from those 6 people that buy it than people that are probably just going to read it once and never look at it again. Because again, it's that physical thing of having it, keeping it, looking back at it. And again, being able to repeat that over and over and over again.
I guess also it's about those people that buy it, maybe only read it once, but then pass it on to someone who turn around and go, well, actually, you know, if you add this in your life, it probably fits with who you are as a character. So, you know, even if it grows organically that way, as opposed to flying off the shelves on a Saturday morning in a supermarket type thing, I think it's just having that ability. How often would you like them to come out and be printed?
Every 4 months,
every
I
four
think.
Months.
Yeah, but a bit behind schedule at the minute because of university. But again, I don't want to rush it because I think I'd fall out of love with it if I'm sort of behind a deadline saying to myself, this needs to be finished by this day, this needs to be finished by the 28th, because I'm just putting pressure on myself for no reason, and I'd rather put my all into it.
So it's like a passion project that you're hoping to put evidence out there of your skill set, I guess, and your interest, and then as you develop it, as if it picked up organically, then that's what you're after. So
Tom, when do you want us to empty our wardrobes, get our retro clothes out, and be in your next edition?
Rob's already got 60 magazines. Was it 60 copies of Face magazine to give you? So,
yeah, I'll come round into that.
I feel like, you know, we should definitely feature in a future edition of your magazine with our retro clothes. Yeah,
starting to interview you all.
Yeah, definite.
Your Saw Sound radio show buddies that were on Spotlight on Heritage, maybe you could do something with us.
I was just going to ask you about place, and is it Leicester based or is it, yeah. So do you use Leicester as a base for it? Does it represent, you know, the people that you're talking to, the street work that you're doing, is that, so what have you picked up about Leicester then at the moment? How would you describe it to somebody?
The only way, I think the best way is to say people from Skegness call people from Leicester Chizzits, because of, again, how much Chizzit rather, how much is it? How would I describe Leicester?
What's the vibe?
Yeah.
You know, it's like people talk about this, there's a scene in each place, like Manchester or Liverpool or London or whatever. What are you picking up on that you think is Leicester?
I think Leicester's evolving into, I think, again, having two universities, Uni of and De Montfort, is really helpful, like, especially when it's like a similar city, sort of Nottingham. And although Leicester's still big and it's not the biggest city, I think it's just like an influx of grown culture. Like, there's new shops opening, there's a heritage action project happening in Leicester. Again, similar to Leeds, they've got had a heritage zone. And I think the vibe for Leicester is, yeah, multicultural and young. Whether, I suppose, you look at a city like Lincoln and you wouldn't think it's the younger city, or a city like Hertfordshire, I'd say Leicester's quite a young city.
And it's interesting, isn't it? Because it's 2,000 years old, yet when you go on any of the Facebook things and anything goes up about anything to do with the city, any kind of changes and stuff, it's like the same old voices that are moaning about how different it is, and, you know, oh, it's this, it's that, and this is these people, it's their fault, and blah, blah, blah. And then you've turned around and said, well, actually, Leicester's quite a young city. Maybe Leicester's just kind of getting on with it. And it shouldn't focus on some of those old voices that turn around and say, well, it's changing too quick. Maybe it's just changing because that's how the world is changing. Excellent. Thanks very much for talking to us, Tom. And Tina, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.